We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular.
Okay. Hello, and you're very welcome to Your Politics Podcast from RTE News. I'm Paul Cunningham. Joining me in his Kerry colours is the political correspondent of RTE, Micheál Lehane. Micheál, how goes?
All right. The All-Ireland win will it be is the question, isn't it? Something that the plan didn't make clearer this week, but it's another question.
Will you even make it to the final, though, given the true blue fighting machine?
I know. I suppose if you knew where it was, though, if you knew the destination, you could work to it. It's not what the country feels generally.
Maybe. Let us move on to matters more serious. The Dáil has, for the past 2 days, been trying to work its way through mandatory hotel quarantine. And there seems to be two things on offer. The government one, which is 20 countries, if you happen to come from them, you're going to end up going to one of these facilities. And then the opposition has a block nearly saying, no, all travellers on unnecessary journeys should be going into these facilities. What's the tone like? What are you picking up as that debate has rolled on?
Yeah, I think it's a crucial point, really, in the entire handling of the pandemic. And while there have been cracks at different times around the consensus approach that was there in the very early days in dealing with the coronavirus, certainly I think things changed this week considerably because you have that unity across the opposition, almost universal unity, exception of few independents. And then you have the government saying, we can only go so far on this and we're following health advice. That's the reason. And we're working closely with the UK government because it's based on the two island strategy. We have a similar approach to them. The opposition say, no, very clearly, you need to go further for the reason, the practical reasons as they outline them, to prevent any variants coming into the country. And also they're saying for that psychological reason that people feel they can't go outside their 5 kilometre limit. Mm-hmm. And yet other people are allowed to engage in some form of international travel. So they feel that their efforts will ultimately be in vain. And then that huge political charge, and it is by any standards made by David Conlan this afternoon, where he says, if variants come into the country and all the consequences of them, it is on you, he said to Stephen Donnelly, you and your government. And Alan Kelly essentially backing that charge later on in the afternoon. So that's fairly serious. And at a point in this where all the contributions from TDs recognise there's a weariness within the population, what you're getting is the fraying of the political system as well.
6 months ago, there wasn't unity of purpose on this, but it seems to have crystallised now, as you said, very much into a coalition government versus opposition.
Yeah, it wasn't really. I know the opposition are saying this point was first raised by NPHET last May. But when you look really at when did it become a live political issue, I mean, in September, it's Solidarity, People Before Profit, bring it to the fore and they raise it and they have kept it as a prominent issue for them. But for others, it wasn't. I mean, in that period coming into Christmas, this wasn't something that was really being discussed across the opposition. But now it's representative, not just of what it is, but of the wider battle against the coronavirus and of that sense that people don't know when this is going to end. And they feel anything could jeopardise the efforts, anything could compromise the vaccines. And the stakes are high for government now. They're really high.
Yeah, I suppose Roisin Short, all of the Social Democrats would also have been sort of late last year, also really banging that drum. But let us take a side turn and bring in Tommy Mescal, because Tommy, you were tracking some of that debate over the past 2 days. What did you pick out?
Well, I suppose, as Micheál was saying, there seemed to be a united approach across the opposition that they want a stricter approach to quarantine. They want mandatory hotel quarantine for all, and they don't think that the government's approach is going to be sufficient. There's a list of 20 countries. Most of them are African countries, and they feel that there's a real risk that you could have this system in place and yet the variants will still come through because countries like America, the UK and many other European countries are not on the list. As you were saying, the Dáil was debating this bill this week and it will continue to debate it. It still has some way to go. But it passed the second stage today, 125 votes to five. The five negative votes were from Solidarity People Before Profit. And we can listen to Richard Boyd Barrett now, and we can listen to, I suppose, his issues with the bill as it stands. We can hear that now.
It makes utterly no sense to select out 20 countries as the government are doing, countries from which there are probably very few people travelling into this country in any event, countries in Africa, some in Latin America, and Austria, for some reason. You know, it's just bizarre, quite honestly, right? But of course, the largest number of travellers coming into this country are from countries where we know there's high levels of COVID cases and where we know the variants are present. The United States, Europe, and many other parts of the world.
I think that issue of Austria came as a result of there being a cluster in relation to one of those new variants, and it had set off alarm bells in Germany, and they were talking about closing their borders and they were going to do it unilaterally rather than seeking EU assistance. But how was the government defending their legislation, which they brought into the Dáil yesterday?
Well, Minister Stephen Donnelly was trying to make the point, I suppose, that there is room under this legislation to increase that list, and he can do it very quickly, is what he was telling TDs, if that needs to happen, and that advice would come from NPHET. In fact, he told the Dáil that he'll be meeting with the deputy CMO later today. This is actually a standard meeting that they have every Thursday, I understand, and they usually talk about things like variants, the R number, and now this list of 20, as it now stands, will become part of that regular conversation. And he'll be asking the deputy CMO or CMO, whoever it might be, if they feel that that list needs to be increased. He'll be asking that question later today. I don't think we can expect an increase in the list today, but I suppose he was trying to make the point to the Dáil that this will always be open for consideration. We can listen to the minister now.
Some have stated that they will be opposing the bill because the list of 20 countries is insufficient. They want it to be significantly more. Can I make the following points to colleagues? It would be incorrect to suggest that the legislation is limited to these 20 countries. The legislation specifically empowers the Minister for Health to designate any additional countries on the advice of the Chief Medical Officer where the evidence so justifies.
Thanks very much, Tommy, for bringing us those clips. That last little bit there, that the CMO was able to advise the government to increase the list. Once again, the government anchoring its defence in that idea of public health advice. Once it's given, they act.
Yeah, it's very different though, isn't it? What the opposition are talking about is really a preventative approach for everyone who's travelling into the country for non-essential reasons. Now, we do know that there is unease about that notion in Fine Gael, as expressed at a parliamentary party meeting a few weeks ago, saying that it would lead to very hard cases and that you would have people returning for funerals or for family reasons and who would be coming into the country with a negative COVID test and yet would still have to make their way into a hotel and stay there for possibly 2 weeks. So it doesn't seem to have any great appetite at government level as well. Leo Varadkar talking about the fact that it would be extremely damaging for the aviation industry. But I think at the same time, when people look at the numbers that came to Dublin Airport last week, and yes, they bear no comparison with this time last year, none at all, but that 10,500 is still something that seems to jar with people as a result of the efforts that they are making. And the government, as it stands, probably aren't making a strong enough case to justify those numbers. And firstly, on the basis, are those people being adequately monitored when they are going into mandatory quarantine in their own homes? And what percentage of them are essential travellers? And is that essential list, is it possibly too long? They're the kind of issues the opposition continue to focus on. And they say it isn't something that the guards can oversee and can monitor at any in any meaningful way. And again, this afternoon, many TDs saying that really is a job, that a public health specialist job, if you are to implement a system to oversee that mandatory quarantine system at home.
OK, we're joined now on the podcast by Sandra Hurley of our political unit. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Paul.
Just want to put you on notice. We had a bit of a weird turn in our podcast last week where we put Micheál Lehan into the psychiatrist chair. And we learned that he was a precocious young talent as a student who used to write for the Irish Independent and now in later life has developed a particular interest in neoclassic Italian cinema.
Wow. Neorealism.
Neorealism, see? Yeah. So just if you want to unburden yourself at any point, Sandra, don't just crash into the middle of it and tell us all about it because it's the type of movie we're trying to create here.
Okay, I didn't realise this was the forum for that kind of thing, but yeah, I'm going to unburden myself generally. I'm sure I'll come up with something a bit later.
Excellent. And this is my pitch for Dr. Anthony Clare's job in some other life. Anyway, let's get back down to our podcast, the political temperature. We were just dealing there, Sandra, with the question of mandatory hotel quarantine. Another big dilemma for the government this week is the question of the Mother and Baby Homes Commission and the intent of Minister Roger O'Gorman to effectively wind it up, and that all of those digital records from survivors being moved to his department by Sunday. Just taking one step back from that, Roger O'Gorman seems to be a minister who's got a lot on his plate. And I'm just wondering, what's the assessment about how he's performing with all of that workload falling on his shoulders?
Yeah, I think he does have a lot on his plate, and there's a lot of focus on him. You know, he's a brand new minister and a brand new TD. Of course, he's been in the Green Party for a long time, but some have questioned his level, I suppose, of political experience at national level and whether he's really had an antenna to sort of get in front of the issues and get them out of the way. And I think, obviously, in terms of mother and baby homes, he has really been under fire for this. And he's been in a really difficult position also. And there is some sympathy for the fact that he's not actually a spokesperson for the Commission of Investigation. It's a completely separate entity, but he is the line minister, so he has been landed with it. There was that upset last October over the data, and it was felt that the minister hadn't consulted sufficiently with survivors. Again, that would call his political judgment into question. And then there's this latest row after the report came out and how he has dealt with all of that. So there has been criticism internally in the other government parties about his handling of that. And I think also when you look at the Green Party and what they wanted going into government, they landed this children's ministry, but they wanted other elements as well. In particular, they wanted to deal with direct provision. It's a big issue for them. And so they added integration into the portfolio. They also added in disability. And that means he has an absolutely enormous department. And I don't think he realised or anticipated that mother and baby homes would take up so much of his time as it has done over the last while. Tomorrow we're going to get the white paper on direct provision. That follows on from Catherine Day's report last year. This is a big political issue for the Greens. They pushed it in the programme for government talks. The other parties, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, I think pushed against them in the sense that, yes, everyone's committed to ending direct provision, but the Green Party wanted to push for everybody having their access to their own door accommodation. The other parties felt that wasn't possible in the current situation where we've got really long housing lists. So there'll be a big interest tomorrow in what's in this paper. And when will the government commit to ending direct provision? How are they going to sort out this problem about accommodation? And again, this is a really tricky one. It feeds into that whole side of the Green Party, that social justice wing, and it's landing on the plate of Roderick O'Gorman.
Micheál, it was interesting how the government is effectively not getting away with, but dealing with the Mother and Baby Homes Commission, because we had this Social Democrats private members motion. The government didn't oppose it, but at the same time, the government isn't going to act on the content of the motion, which was to extend the commission for a year. What do you think of it, and how much of a change is that from normal Dáil practice?
Yeah, it's huge, isn't it? And it's something that's been there now for a few weeks now, the government adapting this particular tactic where they don't oppose things that they don't necessarily agree with. It arose a few weeks ago on an issue in relation to student nurses' pay. Of course, there had been an earlier motion that the government had opposed and had got a lot of grief for and a lot of criticism for quite some time. So equally sensing that this could happen once again with the Mother and Baby Homes Commission, they decide just to let the motion pass essentially in the Dáil, but yet not give it any effect or any legal effect, which is at one level clever, but could you say cynical as well?
And it certainly, that's what the Social Democrats said about it was.
Yeah, and it points to a few things. I mean, if a government, you could say, doesn't have the confidence to assert its position in a counter motion for something that it believes, and it is allowing that commission to wind up at the end of the week. Well, that asks questions of why can't a government feel that they can assert themselves? Is that to do with the political climate that the country is in at the moment, the way things are and the mood out there, that it feels it can't go out and defend a really difficult position, which would be the norm really for any majority government that would arise all the time? They're opting not to do it. This is the one on student nurses' pay, and now again in relation to this commission. And it's a long way from private members' motions never really had the ability to topple a government, but they would always be defended. And when they were lost, of course, famously in 1989, Charlie Haughey returning from Japan and having lost a private members' motion, using that really as the pretext to go to the country and to go to the polls, not necessary. But again, it is something that, that did carry a far more weight than just letting things through the door and not giving them legal effect.
I mean, the footnote on the haemophilia issue was that it was a motion which was going to ensure that money was going to be paid to people with haemophilia who'd been infected with HIV and hepatitis C as a result of contaminated blood products sold by the state blood bank, bought in and then put into people's arms. And yet, that was, he didn't want that to go through, for the payments to go through, and pull the plug. But there was a charge made yesterday, today, by Holly Kearns, who said it wasn't just a political sleight of hand. She argued that this was anti-democratic. Does that charge stand up?
Well, I suppose not strictly speaking, because a government isn't bound by a private member's motion. I mean, it's not one of those ones that they are bound by, even if they lost it. And equally, if a piece of legislation is coming through in that forum as well, if it's a bill, it can go to the next stage and could find itself buried at committee stage, which happened so much during the last particular administration. It is something. It's cynical. Is it anti-democratic? Not in the strictest sense, no.
Yeah, because you've got a government and the government can do what it wants to do.
I do think it's remarkable, though, that it's not just on this issue. In the Shannon as well last week, it adopted a similar approach.
Yeah.
A government doesn't seem to be able to bring the three parties together to go on the front foot and go into a weekend and face the radio programmes, face whatever reaction is in the constituency and deal with it, to stick by their position. And when it comes to asking questions about the long-term future of government, then do they keep doing that? Do they keep just letting these motions pass and sit there? Or does it raise questions about the long-term prospects of this government?
I mean, clearly, Sandra Hurley, the opposition were upset at how the government was dealing with it, but maybe it's something which could rebound on the government if they do it too often.
Yes, I think so. And, if you cast your mind back to the student nurses motion, the government didn't oppose that. And at the beginning, they did try to argue that there were some elements in the motion that simply didn't stack up, but they just felt they were losing the argument, that it's not one that you can't argue against paying student nurses more money, really. It's a difficult one to go out there and fight. So they simply, as Micheál said, it's kind of a cynical move. They've just come up with this solution. But it's a strategy that you'd have to call into question, and one that if they fall back on it too often, it really will become laughable.
What's the point, really, then? You'd have to ask about the opposition putting down a private member's motion. I mean, maybe if you're back in the Dáil chamber, it might be different in the sense that politicians will all be there. They will have to sit down and vote. And I suppose then you could even push it, could you potentially, through to a walk-through vote and just really make the point as to what's happening. But given that politics has been carried out in a different building and been done in a slightly different way, with the reduced numbers voting and the like, It allows for this. It allows for this particular tactic.
Yeah, it sounds like, it sounds like a weapon. It could become a weapon which could be turned against the government. And this is a coalition government which, it has to be said, has been sticking the knife into itself every now and again. Micheál, can you bring us up to date on the parliamentary party meetings? Not necessarily the detail of it and who was talking, but just really the mood about where things are at. Because if you take mother and baby homes, if you take you're in lockdown for another 6 weeks, if you take mandatory hotel quarantine and a couple of duff media performances, it's been a rough one.
Yeah, it has. And that question of communications coming to the fore at the Fine Gael one. I always think that communications really is a word for a level of when people are disgruntled, when they can't see a way through a particular thing. It's always a communications crisis. But of course, the biggest problem for government is that, apart from the vaccines and the rollout of the vaccines, which of course is always conditional on supply, so it's not an absolute thing, despite pledges and guarantees that things are looking a lot more solid on that front, there isn't a lot of good news that they can give at the moment. And it's for that reason that you have a communications problem. As well as that, within government, you have different ministers at different times in the last 2 weeks saying different things, which caused no end of difficulty.
Sander, you were saying in a couple of podcasts a long time ago, talking about how the government was hitching its star to the vaccine bandwagon. And even today in the Dáil, opposition parties were picking up on the rollout and they were saying, you've continually told the public that as soon as the drugs arrive, we're getting it into people's arms. And there were stories and anecdotes of this GP didn't have any and someone had turned up at a GP service in Dublin and didn't get it. Once again, you just had that sort of rumbling going through, which was seemed, at least from my perspective, to be making, you know, government TDs uneasy.
Yes, and I think we're going to see even more of this as the vaccination programme really ramps up, probably more in April, because people will be looking around and saying, well, why has one GP got it? And or it's available in one area, but it's not available in another. And that's something that TDs are going to get it in the neck from constituents and they are going to relay that back in within government. I do think ultimately, though, when you look at the numbers in terms of vaccinations and the millions and millions of doses that are due in the country, that it is going to come good at some stage this year. We just need to hold on a little further. And that's really about the government has to hold its nerve. That's what I think that the main party leaders have been trying to do with their own parties, just telling them to kind of keep it steady, because ultimately Ireland will have way more vaccines than it possibly needs. And towards the end of the year, things should improve a lot more. But then, of course, it might come back to the variants and what you've been talking about in relation to mandatory quarantine and whether the planned measures go far enough.
A little sidetrack question, Micheál. I mean, there was an opinion poll which suggesting that independent TDs are doing very well. But within the context of the Dáil, you know, Sinn Féin, Social Democrats, Labour have really been sucking all the oxygen when it comes to opposition time. Where are the rural independents, the regional independents, the independent group and the capacity as independents to get a message forward? Because it seems to be drowned out just at the moment.
Yeah, you can see the clear unity of purpose in the opposition parties, if you like. I suppose the independent groups are getting to ask questions, though, on leaders' questions. So they do have prime billing in a way that independents in the past didn't always have. So you can see that. When you're looking, though, for a cohesive voice across them, that's probably not as easy to identify. You have people like Matthew McGrath at one side, who's sceptical of a lot of the government's approach when it comes to tackling the coronavirus in a different way and presented in a different manner, and sometimes in the manner of someone in a courtroom. You have Michael McNamara doing that, but differently. And then you've someone like Cathal Berry, who largely agrees with the government approach, but yet when he does make criticisms, they perhaps are telling and incisive.
What's your take on this, Sandra? Because it is an interesting thing where we have this sense that if the political party structures are going to be breaking down, that the independents are going to have a greater role. But in the context of Parliament, it's hard if you're an independent for them all to be grouped together and acting collectively.
Yes, and you can see that in the votes, because frequently, you know, the independents don't kind of, the various groupings, they've come together for speaking rights, but they don't have to vote all the same way on many issues. So you see that in terms of the votes being split. So in terms of the various groupings, they're not that cohesive, I suppose. And there are, as you've talked about, so many different voices talking about individual things. We do see that when independents get to question the Taoiseach or the Tánaiste at leaders' questions, they do tend to bring up their local issue, as you might expect. That's why they were elected. I think something else, though, when you mentioned there the poll findings on independence, that, you know, that is one that's difficult to gauge, because that's something that's very difficult to pick up on a national poll, because people do, of course, attract, they pick up votes in their own individual constituency. So trying to track independence going up or down in a national poll, I think, is very difficult. But I suppose it's one to watch. And we've seen independence over the last 20 years play such a big role in Irish politics.
It's just illustrative, perhaps, that people are fed up of political parties. And
yeah,
that's,
well, just I think, to be fair, we better say it's an Irish Times Ipsos MRBI poll, which we're discussing.
Give us the margin
here
of error there,
2.8%. See, no. But on that issue of you know, where things are going and the capacity to calculate any of this stuff, do you believe in polls? all of them, not talking about this one, but in the context of swings that we've seen over the past 10 years, you know, you look at some, say like the Red Sea, tracking month on month on month. And yet when we look back at the last general election, there was a huge tidal wave which came in for Sinn Féin, which simply hadn't been predicted.
Not in the months leading up to it, but I suppose once the election got underway, it did seem to have a sense of it as well. It was putting Sinn Féin well above the 15% mark up to 18-20. Perhaps didn't get the full scale of it, but it did once people started engaging. I suppose the thing about opinion polls is that they're a large swathe of the population when you're in that period far away from an election. Perhaps they do answer the question, but how meaningfully are they engaging with that question of who they might vote for?
What do you think, Sandra?
Do
you believe them? When you look at it, do you say this is a representative examination of where the political thought is on that day?
Yeah, I think, you know, you'd have difficulty with the hard figures, and sometimes the changes are within the margin of error. But, you know, you're looking at overall trends, and there's no question when we look at the three largest parties that, you know, after the election, we were talking about three medium-sized parties, Sinn Féin, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Sinn Féin had made that breakthrough. But the consistent pattern over the last few months has been we're now kind of talking about two big parties and a medium party being Fianna Fáil, which has consistently fallen behind those other two with a really large gap, which has been cemented in poll after poll. And they haven't been breaking out of that mid-teen level. And, you know, internally, lots of questions. Why are Fine Gael way up when we're in government with them? You might expect Sinn Féin to do a little better in opposition. Maybe it's easier to point out all the flaws in the government policy than taking kind of hard decisions. That's how the government parties might put it. But that divergence between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, that's difficult to explain internally.
Okay, we're nearly at the end of it, but I think, as you say, looking at that poll, Sinn Féin was only down marginally by 1 point, sticking at 28%, just 2 points behind Fine Gael. Mary Lou MacDonald, once again, only down marginally, well within the margin of error. They'll be very happy. Micheál Lehane, over the past year, if you're looking at Sinn Féin, out of all the TDs that they have, who do you think is their star performer?
Well, there's different rankings of TDs in Sinn Féin.
I'm not asking you now for 10 or 12.
There's the new TDs who do speak a lot in the chamber, particularly on Thursdays. And then there's the experienced ones. And I suppose of the person who kind of has become most prominent through this, and that's what you'd expect, is the health spokesperson, David Cullinan, in a way that Piers Doherty during the financial crisis as finance spokesperson kind of came to prominence. I think it's David Cullinan who is the one who looks on the front bench to be one of the strong performers now.
Sandra, who is your pick? He's taken David Cullinan, so you have to go for someone else.
Okay. Well, I think Louise O'Reilly actually is very effective. You know, it was, I suppose, some people thought it was a surprising move to move her out of health because that had, you know, she'd covered that during the beginning of the pandemic. Maybe there was a feeling within the party that they were going to move her to business because she would be marking essentially Leo Varadkar and she'd be a good match for him. But I think she's across the brief fairly well.
Okay, we'll wrap it there. No one wanted to unburden themselves on this particular podcast, maybe next week, but I'd like to thank Micheál Lehane, Sandra Hurley and Tommy Meskell. Thanks very much for listening to Your Politics Podcast from RT News. Please do subscribe. Please do leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. But until next time, take care.